Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, it's pretty good when you've got an estate that's over 20 years old and they're still getting articles written about it.
Oh, really?
So we're going to do a little bit of celebrity corner today.
Okay.
And, delve into a couple of details regarding the estate of the late Jerry Garcia.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Jerry Garcia's estate.
Yes. Famous, guitarist and singer for the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, I met him once.
And, just interesting. I mean, you know, flipping through the blog posts and articles, all of a sudden I see a Jerry Garcia article and I said, I think I might read this one. And so that's how we got here today. And also want to talk a little bit about, just lessons we can learn from his estate.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll start with just a little brief discussion about naming an executor of an estate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Ben, when you're thinking about an executor who will handle your affairs, you name this person in your will as someone who will handle your estate for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the settlement of the estate includes, you know, the marshaling of assets, the payment of estate debts, and make sure your taxes get filed and paid.
Right.
And just anything that can be associated with your estate is what this executor is going to be in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a trustworthy person, someone that can get along with multiple parties, because bear in mind, they're going to be the ones who are going to be dealing with the beneficiaries of the estate. So when we're looking at who would be a proper person for to name in your will as the executor of your estate, we're really looking at a very fact-specific basis, because we're looking at your personal facts and circumstances and trying to determine who would best fit the need for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Ben, when we have long-term spouses who have been married to one another for a long period of time, that's a pretty good indication that you can trust that person.
Right.
And that they would be a good person to manage your affairs. Maybe even if there is, you know, a second marriage,
mm-hmm.
Because of the length of time of the marriage. But if there is a second marriage, Ben, then we have to look and see whether or not that individual would be able to work with, the kids from the previous marriage. You know, what's their relationship like? Is there going to be any acrimony? Because any time that we name an executor who doesn't quite get along with the other parties, we're immediately entering strife and possible estate litigation into the mix just by simply naming the wrong executor. And so, for example, in the estate of Jerry Garcia, he named his third wife, Deborah Coons, to be the executor of his estate. They had been married for about a year when Jerry Garcia passed in 1995 at the age of 53. And she was the person that was chosen to deal with beneficiaries of his estate, which included his three daughters from two ex-wives, a fourth daughter from a former girlfriend, and a stepdaughter, among other beneficiaries.
Wow.
So, you know, when we sit back and look at it, Ben, was Deborah Coons the correct person to be in charge of Jerry Garcia's estate?
Well, again, you got to think about the other factor here is that he is relatively young.
That's right.
And so when you're planning all these things, you're not thinking about that you might not be here the next day.
That's exactly right. That's a good point. You know, you want to make sure the person you name, you know, that person would serve immediately upon your death. They make application with the clerk of court and they're up. So in this particular regard, Jerry named Deborah Coons. Of course, he's in the honeymoon stage of marriage, I presume, when he writes his will and says, oh, there would be nobody better than, you know, my new wife to go ahead and administer my estate, not thinking about the logistics and the trouble spot that maybe he was putting her in, having to deal with all of these beneficiaries, you know. And it's telling, Ben, when her first step was to bar both former ex-wives from the funeral.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, you know, you get an indication of that right from the very beginning as to how this estate is really truly going to go. So, you know, one of the big things that Deborah had to deal with was, a claim by the second wife, Carolyn Mountain Girl Adams, who happened to put forth a divorce settlement, and it was signed by Jerry, signed by Mountain Girl.
Yeah.
And it said, you know, that Miss Mountain Girl was going to get $5 million over 20 years, payable $250,000 per year. And it even included language saying that it would proceed on to Jerry's estate would be liable for the payments.
Right.
And
right.
They actually had to go to court over this. And it was determined that this was a valid divorce decree.
Yeah, I'm looking at the article in the New York Times right now where it says it was she won the ruling.
A valid divorce decree. And then, of course, appeals and such can be had. So she ended up settling for $1.25 million from the estate.
Mm-hmm.
But here you go is a prime example where you've got the current wife dealing with the ex-wife, the second wife, because of the named executor. So there can be no independent analysis for the most part. It's going to be Deborah Coons and what does she think of Mountain Girl. And all of the emotions and everything else that comes into play here, and which is why you probably had a very long, drawn out process dealing with this divorce decree when maybe, you know, cooler heads could prevail if you had someone in the spot who is maybe more independent in nature, such as an independent attorney or
Mountain Girl had two daughters with him.
That's right.
So you got a lot of parts of this tree.
That's exactly right. So that shows you right there that, you know, you really need to be careful who you choose to be the executor of your estate, because they're the ones who ultimately have to deal with these types of issues. And, you know, you might not have as complex a matter as Jerry Garcia did.
Right.
But I think it's very telling to show that you really need to put a person in position of the executor who can be pretty independent and can make decisions that can save the estate money in the long run.
Yes. Now again, this was a will that was written after he married this third wife.
Correct.
So, right. So.
Yeah.
So it replaced anything else they may have.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Except for an agreement like that.
Yes, that agreement is what's binding. And as I said, the agreement was very specific. I read it, and it did say that it would bound Jerry's estate.
Uh-huh.
So it looked like it was pretty clear cut on its face that this was going to be upheld regardless. But you know, if you read a little bit of what happened during the during the hearing themselves, it was a lot of personal attacks, I guess is the best way for me to put it, and just saying that this, you know, this wasn't a real marriage, all that kind of stuff. Well, it was a real marriage, and there was a real divorce decree, and therefore it settled, and the agreement's a contract, and it was binding.
Yeah.
So that's how the court ended up shaking that one out. The other thing that I thought was real telling in Jerry's estate is that he left four guitars to Doug Irwin. And now Doug Irwin was the only non-family beneficiary of this estate.
Mm-hmm.
This happens a lot, Ben. We have clients that come in all the time that say, listen, you know, I've got, you know, XYZ personal property that I want to leave to someone else who's not really named in the will. And typically what we'll do is we'll say, listen, leave a handwritten list of items, and we will make sure that the executor upholds that list of items. Now, Doug Irwin actually was what we call a specific bequest in the will. Jerry says, you get four guitars.
Mm-hmm.
You made these guitars. I want them to go back to you. Problem is, and this we deal with this all the time as well, Ben, who do these guitars belong to?
Hmm.
Next thing you know, you've got the Grateful Dead band members coming forward and saying, wait, whoa, whoa, those weren't Jerry's guitars. Those were band guitars.
Uh-huh,
those were
right.
Grateful Dead guitars. So not so fast, Doug Irwin. You don't get these guitars. These guitars belong to the band as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a problem we run into because guess what, Ben? Guitars don't have titles.
Mm-hmm.
Guitars don't have deeds.
Provenance.
Exactly right. It's, you know, who's got possession of these guitars and what are we going to rule? Who do these guitars actually belong to?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I mean, and again, you look at how were they kept, for example? Were they kept with all the band equipment?
Exactly right. So here we go again. We're back in court in a hearing to try to determine who has ownership over these guitars. And ultimately the party said, you know what? Let's split the baby. Doug Irwin, you take two guitars. Grateful Dead Band will take two guitars, and we'll go about our merry way.
Hmm.
And you're probably sitting here thinking, well, Andrew, what in the world are you talking about? You know, a couple guitars. I mean, come on. These things were old, used, played. Well, guess what they fetched on the auction block, Ben?
Yeah.
$1.8 million. So we're not talking about just some, you know, old, silly guitars. But I think it's very telling because this shows, Ben, how it's very important when we deal with tangible property, to, you know, be specific. If you want to leave something to someone and we leave the handwritten list in our will, we be specific about the property and we say, you know, this is exactly what I want to leave to this particular person in order to make sure that you show that you had dominion and control and ownership of it. Because I got news for you. Tangible property is one of the most divisive areas mm-hmm. of an estate that we deal with. And it usually goes one of two ways. Either the family can work it out very smoothly with the executor and everything is hunky-dory and we have no problem, or it's World War III over, right. over tangible property. So this is an area where I think it's very telling. Again, in Jerry's estate where we had a problem with who actually owned these guitars. And it's mm-hmm. a very, very, it's a problem that comes up quite often in estates that we deal with. And, you know, one way to remedy it is to be specific about what items you want and to be as specific as possible in a list of items that you want to go to various people. Mm-hmm.
Do you want that list to be outside of the will?
I do. And the reason for it is because if you put specific items in there, and we mentioned this before on the program, let's just say that you want your, you know, 2017 Cadillac
right.
to go to my daughter, and then when you pass away, the 2017 Cadillac is no more,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not going to be good. But yeah. if you can put, you know, at least a car goes to my daughter, then
whatever it is.
Exactly. Whatever car you have when you die is what will go to them. So it's important. Sometimes we don't want those to be in the will. We want there to be a handwritten list that can be changed if necessary, modified, and can be the executor then would have the responsibility to uphold what is on that particular list.
By the way, you can look it up. Jerry Garcia's will is online. You can. I'm looking at it right now. It's really quite fascinating if you want to go see that. But also, if you want to get some questions answered about your own tax situation, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins and Andrew Foster, afoster@harvellandcollins.com, and check that out for taking care of your taxes through harvellandcollins.com.